All right, it's good to see everyone out this morning. We're going to be in Acts chapter 27, and I don't know if you can read that or not, but I've got it here. I'll read it. I'll read it to us. Acts chapter 27. It was around AD 56 or 57, while Paul was in Corinth during his third journey, that he wrote the letter to the Romans expressing his desire to come to them if God wills. That was in Romans chapter 1, verse 10. At the time this letter was written, the church in Rome had already been established for many years, and we see that in Romans chapter 1, verse 8. Now, as we are at the end of his journey, in Acts chapter 21, Paul finds himself, he found himself arrested in Jerusalem and as was prophesied earlier in the chapter. As Paul does often, he defends himself and his actions to the mob and then to the council. We see that in Acts chapter 22 and 23. Then in Acts chapter 23, verse 11, while Paul was being held by the Romans, God makes a promise to him. He encourages Paul to be of good cheer, telling him, "You must bear witness at Rome." Paul never fails to believe in that promise. 2 years pass as Paul waits in prison, not knowing when he would leave for Rome. We see that in the end of Acts chapter 24. And through all of this, he continued to fulfill his mission of preaching the gospel. In Acts 25 and 26, he is given the opportunity to present the gospel to King Agrippa, fulfilling the prophecy that Jesus spoke of in Acts chapter 9, verse 15, that he would carry Jesus' name to kings. Paul presents a compelling speech to the king, only to hear his reply, "You've almost persuaded me to become a Christian." But through all of this, and this is what I want us to think about, through all of this, Paul leaves all the logistics and the timing for his trip to Rome up to God. I think that's a great show of faith and trust and commitment that Paul had in God. Think about Paul's given this mission, and it's kind of like you think about a football team, and you hear them use the word execution a lot. You know, execution, we have to execute. And Paul, given this mission, he executed. He left everything else up to God, didn't he? God said, "You're going to go to Rome." He just kept on taking care of what he was supposed to take care of. He executed his mission. And I think that's very, very good lesson for us to think about. Okay, so let's go to Acts chapter 27, and we're going to read through it, and we can make some comments and talk about it as we go. Let's start by reading the first three verses. "And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So, entering a ship of Adramidium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coasts of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. And the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go to his friends and receive care." So, as we know, we've talked about this in the past. It mentions "we." So we put to sea, so that we would have been Luke and Paul. And then it mentions there Aristarchus. Does anybody remember where he had been mentioned in the past? You may have a footnote there. Acts chapter 19, verse 29, back in when there was the uproar at Ephesus, it says, "So the whole city," this is Acts 19, 29, "So the whole city was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companion. So there's speaks of him back there in Acts chapter 19. And so we see here that as Luke writes this, that he's mentioning himself as well in the we. So they, I'm going to put this map up here and just leave it up here. And I know it's difficult maybe to see with the colors a little messed up right now. But they start out and they are in Caesarea and they go to Sidon. Let's look at verses 4 and 6. So when we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. When we had sailed over the sea, which is off of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. So they started out on one ship, and then when they get to Myra, if you can see that up there, and Lycia, they're on the coast, they change ships. It's an Alexandrian ship. Where would this ship have been from? Alexandria. And it was an Egyptian ship, right? And we know later, what was it carrying? The main cargo was wheat, okay? So Rome would have counted on this wheat, which had been come from Egypt, to feed those in the country. So it's an Alexandrian ship that they changed to. And then let's jump over to verses 7 and 8. And when we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty to Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salmone. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. Okay, so we see then that now, and things up to this point have, of course, we all, I'm sure, know the story, but up to this point, things have gone well for them. The sailing's not been too bad. They've stayed along the coast. They changed to the larger ship, and now they are coming up to Fair Havens. Okay, so Fair Havens, you can see down there, is on the island, and they stop there, and then let's move on to the next verses 9 through 12. It says, now when much time had been spent, and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by many things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable in to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete opening toward the southwest and northwest, and they could winter there. Okay, so sailing was becoming dangerous. And what does it say was already over? The fast was already over. This would have been the Day of Atonement. And so why does he mention that here? Any thoughts? Okay, that could be part of it, all right? Yeah, and I think that's the other part of it. And of course, they probably, sailing was going pretty good at this point, right? So, but they did know that winter was coming on, and I think that's one reason why that's mentioned. That was over. We know that was in September, October sometime on our calendar. And so that being over tells us that winter is approaching quickly. What did they, on the Mediterranean in the winter, what did they, at this point in time anyway, in these years, what did they do when winter came? They didn't stayed in the harbor. Okay, so they didn't spend any time out on the sea at this time because it was just too rough and too dangerous to be out there. So we can see that when it says that they planned on wintering there. So, and there's two. Paul says he. What does he say? Let's see. And Paul says in verse 10, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster. Okay, now Paul's he's not in charge of the ship, right? He's a prisoner. Okay, he speaks up and he says, I think, you know, this could be a dangerous thing for us to do. Well, what may Paul be basing that on? Yes, his personal experience. He's already been through some shipwrecks, right? So he understands, although he's not a sailor, he understands what it's like to be on the sea and how dangerous it can be. And he perceives, we've talked about his perception before, Paul just doesn't have a good feeling about this, right? He perceives that we don't need to do this. And he gives his advice. But there's two reasons that he couldn't persuade them. What were the two reasons? Exactly. So they, obviously, they're in charge of the ship. So they're the ones going to have to make the decision. And then another point actually says the harbor there where they were was not suitable to winter in. So it says they're going to go to Phoenix. Now, if you look on the map, this is where things change for them. I don't know if you can see that, but you see Fair Havens. Where is Phoenix? Not very far away, right? It's not very far away. So their plan is to leave there, go to Phoenix where they have a better place to stay for through the winter. And so that is their plan. Okay, I can see their reasoning. We just got a little ways to go up this coast, and we can be there. Okay, and then things begin to change. Verses 13 through 17. When the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, a tempestuous wind arose, which called Euroclydon. So when the ship, and I don't know if I pronounced that right, so when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. And running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. When they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Syrtis sands, they struck sail, and so were driven. Okay, so we learn a lot right there in those four verses. So the south, so they decide they're going to go, and the south wind is blowing softly. So that would have helped them to sail the direction they wanted to go. They put out to sea, and they stayed close to Crete, the island. But after that, this strong wind comes up. It's, I think it's also described as a northeaster or something like that. Something that was actually common in the area that happened at times. And they get caught in this. And it says this, and they could not head into the wind, they let her drive. So I'm going to break this down. So they couldn't head into the wind, okay? They needed to go the direction the wind was coming at them, and they couldn't do that. And what did they have to do when it says they let her drive? What does that mean? All right, so they pretty much were at the mercy of the wind at this point, right? Okay, so they had to just let it go. They couldn't sail into it. Okay. So they stayed under the shelter of Clauda, which you can see down is another little island below there. So they come down, and it says they stayed under the shelter, so this would have sort of blocked them from the wind as they sailed down. And what did they do at this point? They're realizing now, you know, they're in some serious trouble. What do they do at this point? Okay, so they secured the skiff, and it says with difficulty. Now, someone may have another version that's got a different word for skiff. But what is a skiff? Yep. Yes. Okay. So it was with, it stayed with the ship. From what I read, a lot of times it would sort of be in tow behind the ship. And so we can see that because they're going to bring it up into the ship in a minute. And I don't know how big it was. It would hold several people. They would use it. And you think about a ship that comes up close to land. Maybe they get off onto that and take it on into land, whatever they used it for, bringing supplies and things back and forth that they might need. So they had this with them. So now they decide they better pull it up in there and put it on the ship. Okay. Okay, so they secured the skiff, so they get it on board, and then it says they use cables to undergird the ship. Okay, so now they're trying to get everything kind of put together, right, for this storm that they're in. So they get the small boat, the skiff, up onto the ship, and they undergird the ship. So basically, they use cables or something that goes underneath it. Of course, ships would have been made of wood, and they use this underneath it to hold it all together, as they know they're going to be into these storms, and it's going to batter the ship a lot. So they're going to try to hold it together. You know how they did that, I don't know. I don't know if they just throw them down and somehow they get them up to the other side. I don't know how that works, but of course they knew how to do it, and they got all the undergirding done on the ship to try to hold it together. Sir? Yeah, that's a tough job. Somebody has to volunteer, maybe to go into the ship to pull it under to the other side. I don't know how. Throw them overboard with the cable, and you're just going to have to do it. But yeah, but they somehow knew how to do that, and they got the ship all undergirded so to give it more strength. And then it says, fearing lest they should run aground on the, I have Syrtis Sands. I don't know if anybody has another name for that, Syrtis Sands. But they were concerned about this certain area, which they knew about, and they undergirded the ship. So apparently these Syrtis Sands, let's see, I think I wrote some notes down about it. So off the coast of North Africa would have been these, they sort of sands, or they call them quicksands of some sort, but barely, actually it was sort of a bay area where this is sandy, and the water barely covered this. And at times they said that even today, clouds of sand can kind of rise up from this, where it actually obscures your view, and it's very overwhelming when you get into it and you can't see, and of course it's not deep at all, and you can run aground. And of course these sailors knew about that, and they didn't want to get into that, so they had to make sure that they prepared themselves as much as they can. Sandbar, yes, sir. Some type of a place, if you've ever been down, you know, seen off the beach, or you can look out in the water, you can see where it looks a little deep, and then all of a sudden there's a sandbar out there. And you can go out there and you can stand on it, you know, and just maybe waist high. So something similar to that. So you remember, this is a bigger ship than the first one they are on, and it would not have lasted had it run aground onto that. Okay, verses 18 and 19. So you can see matters getting worse. Okay, their plan was to land at Phoenix. They missed Phoenix because of this storm. They go under this under the island of Claudius, secure everything as much as they can. It says in verse 18, and because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. So now, you know, they're taking more steps. So they've gotten the skiff up into the boat. They've girded it up, and that now they're going to start to lighten the load. They're going to throw off some tackle and things like that that maybe they felt they could survive without having it, okay? I don't think they threw everything out at this point. So they threw the tackle overboard with our own hands. And then verse 20 says, now when neither sun nor stars appeared, for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved is finally given up. So they now at this point, they feel that they're feeling in a hopeless situation. We've done everything we can. We still have this storm raging down on the ship. We're being driven wherever it wants to drive us to. We know we're near these sands that we could crash on, and they basically now are at the mercy of the weather. Well, let's look at verses 21 through 27. But after long abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss. And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God, of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you. Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it is told to me. However, we must run aground on a certain island. But when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. So, going back to verse 21, long abstinence from food. Of course, they're trying to keep the ship afloat, and obviously they don't have time to stop and eat much. And then Paul stands up, and what does he say to him? I kind of think about, yeah. That's what I thought when I read that. I thought, I told you so. I thought you should have listened to me. And what I see as you go through this narrative is you have men in control of the ship, and then you see that Paul begins to sort of be noted here, right? Paul, now he stands up and he says, you should have listened to me, that we should have stayed where we were. But what does he do in verse 22? All right, he encourages him. He says, take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. Okay, so he encourages them. And why does he tell them this? What happened? Stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So he tells them this, the God I serve, he's going to take care of us. Okay? And he's going to make sure that we get to our destination. Had to be a great encouragement to these men. Yeah, that's right. And so we begin to see God's providence at work here, right? Okay. So he tells them, we're going to run aground and we're going to land on a certain island. Verse 27, 14th night had come. So they've been 14 nights. They've been driven up and down, and pretty much pushed by the storm and the winds. But something happens. The sailors sensed they were drawing near some land. Verses 28 through 29, they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little farther, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. Okay, so it's about 120 feet down to about 90 feet. And then verse 29, fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. Okay, so they dropped four anchors down. Where's the stern? I don't know much about ships, but you know, just enough to know what's front and back. So what is the stern? Okay, that's the back of the ship. Okay, so they dropped four anchors down from the back of the ship. Now, what I read, you know, anchors in that period of time, as compared to anchors that we have today, might not have been as large. So they dropped these four anchors down. And just a side note, interesting to me, was they dropped four anchors out there. I wonder if they're still there. Just got thinking about that. I wonder if those anchors are still there. I don't know. Somewhere out in that sea. But anyway, they dropped the four anchors down to control the boat, okay, because now they see that they are getting close to some kind of land. They don't really know where they are, and they don't want to run aground. And it says they prayed for day to come. So basically, they just dropped those anchors down and prayed for day. So they could hold it through one more night, and then they could have some daylight, and they might be able to see where they were. Okay, verses 30 through 32. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. Okay, first thought I had was early on, when Paul said, "We don't need to go, we need to stay where we are," and he comes back, he says, "I told you, you should have listened to me." Seems like they learned their lesson, right? They're going to listen to Paul this time. They know they got to keep everybody on the ship based from what Paul told them about the God that he serves. So the centurion and the soldiers listened to Paul. They cut away the ropes of the skiff, and they let it fall off. So it goes out in the water, and now it is gone. They have no other way of getting off this ship, do they? They're on it now. Unless they just jump off. They know they don't have much chance if they jump off. So they are on the ship. And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, "Today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you." Okay. And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all encouraged and also took food themselves. Okay, so backing up, they cut away the ropes. It's almost dawn, so they're beginning to be able to, they can see where they are. They all take food to eat. Paul's encouragement is to go ahead and eat, because this is for their survival. And then he says, "Since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you." Okay, more encouragement. Takes these things. He took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. So he encourages them to all eat. They eat. And what does he do before they eat? Gives thanks for it. I was thinking about God's plan is for all men to be saved. That's his goal. That's his plan. That's first and foremost. And I can see in this encouragement, and I think about these men that were on this ship. We don't really know anything about what happens to them after Paul gets to Rome. You have to kind of wonder what impression this might have made on them. What impression did this make on these men? Everything that Paul said came about, talked about the God that he served. Just have to kind of wonder what happened to him. Did they look into it? Did they say, hey, there's something to this God that he serves? You know? We just don't know. All right, any comments? Yes, that's a good point. And he's telling them, the one I serve, the one that I know is in control of all of this, right, is the one. And in a sense, somewhere in their mind, they could be thinking, maybe I need to be serving this God as well. So, okay, good comment. Okay, verse 37. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship. So pretty close to 300 on the ship. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, and now they threw out the wheat. So now they've already thrown out all the tackle, everything they can. The skiff is gone. And now they threw out the wheat, right? This is just survival at this point. Their thoughts of trying to get this wheat delivered to wherever they were to take it to, is long gone, and they're going to throw out the wheat, just trying to keep the ship from breaking up. Now it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay, a beach, onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. Meanwhile, loosing the rudder ropes, they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for sure. Okay, so now if we back up and look at the whole picture, daylight has come, they've all had something to eat. It's been 14 days. Whether or not they never had a meal in those days. They may have had bites of something to eat. I don't know. But they've gone a long time without really a meal. So they've eaten this meal, they're strengthened. And now, daylight's come, they can see this beach, they can see a place, and they're encouraged to think that we might be able to make it there. So they, it says they let go the anchors, so they cut the anchors off, left them out in the sea, and it says they loosed the rudder ropes, which means that they dropped the rudders back down, probably to help them, because the rudders would steer the ship, to steer it in the direction they wanted to go. And then they hoisted the mainsail to the wind. And what would the mainsail do for them? Yeah, it's like what the word says. This is the mainsail, right? It's going to be the biggest one. It's going to take that wind, and they're hoping it will just drive them right up onto the island, or at least close to it. And they made for shore, it says. But striking a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. So again, if you picture this, now they're trying to get the ship up on the shore. The prow, which would, if I understand right, would be the part of the bow that's actually above the water when it's in the water. So they are pointing the direction of the island. It gets stuck into the ground of the rocks below, and it couldn't move. Now with that happening, you have the stern, and you still have the waves battering the ship, and it says the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. Okay. Now remember, Paul has said, you know, we're all going to make it. We're all going to be saved. This next verse. Now the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. Now they're concerned now at this point. They see they're going to land. and they're hoping to make it. They don't want this. They don't want the prisoners to escape. What would it mean when they get back to, mean to them when they get back to Rome if some of the prisoners escaped? Yeah, probably going to be their head for that, right? So their decision is, well, we'll kill all the prisoners just to make sure that we don't lose anybody. But the centurion wanted to save Paul, kept them from their purpose, and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it was, they all escaped safely to land. Okay, so there's the ship, battered and beaten. They don't have anything to get to land with, so they just got to swim or they got to jump on a board. Everybody makes it safely to land. What did Paul say would happen? Yeah, all would live. And again, I think about the impression it must have made on some of these people, not all, the things that Paul said and what came about. And just have to wonder what they thought after this was over, and you know, in their future life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and even through this chapter, we see that where, you know, he was allowed to go see his friends when they. Yes, it's just God's providence. God said, you're going to get to Rome. He wasn't told how. Okay, and what impresses me is that through all this shipwreck and everything, Paul knows he's going to get there. You know, he knows he's going to get there, just a really impressive lesson. I know the first bell rang. Let's just jump in. There's just a couple things that I thought about as I was studying this. God's promises never fail, right? God's promises never fail. Paul was told he's going to go to Rome, and he's going to go to Rome. Okay, let's move on to the next one. I think about Paul keeping his eye on the goal, right? Paul kept his eye on the goal. He's told what's going to happen, and he never stopped thinking about where God told him he would be. Trusting God, he's in control, right? And we need to be obedient to do it his way, right? God's in control. We need to do it his way. Many times we see studies in the Old Testament where, you know, people chose to try to do it their way, and it didn't work. All right. And what I think about Paul is, through all of this, he never quit sowing the seed. He never quit preaching. Whatever position he was in, whatever happened, prison, on the ship, he was always showing the seed, talking about his God, and trying to bring others to Christ. All right, anything else? All right. One last verse, and then we'll call it quits. So we look at verse 28. It says, now when they escaped, they found out the island was called Malta. So now they land. Let's go back there. And they are on the Isle of Malta, right over there under Sicily. In 28, we'll look at his trip to Rome. All right. Any other thoughts, questions? All right, thank you very much.